Hey kids, welcome to another exciting edition of Conspire a Theory. Just me today. And for everyone out there, happy belated Father's Day. I hope you all had a good Father's Day this Sunday. And hey, what's up to all the dads out there? Hope you got all you needed and everything you wanted out of the holiday. It is your day. Have fun. Anyways, so today's episode is Good Guy Dog Man's. And a bonus, ask me anything at the end of the show. So today I would like to discuss some of the more prominent dogman stories out there in the history and in the lore. And I would also like to discuss some actual good guy dogman stories out there that are hidden deep within our lore in some of our cultures across the lands. The first story comes from us from Converse, Texas, which is actually a hop and a skip away from me. From the mid to late 1800s, a rancher sends his boy out to hunt. The boy doesn't return. The party goes out looking for the boy. They stumble onto the gruesome sight of a werewolf eating the boy. Pretty much it was like this. What happened was the ranching father was like, you know, hey boy, you gotta do a, pick up the pace, carry your weight around here, go do hunting. I'm gonna make a man out of you. I don't know why I'm making the father Italian in this one. That's just what I feel from reading the story from the research I've done. Anyway, so he's all telling this kid, hey boy, you gotta be a man. You gotta go and hunt another creatures and hunt the things and go hunt the deers and out there in the wilderness. And at this time, Converse and most of Central Texas was still a developing area. So there was a lot of wilderness and a lot of stuff to, you know, conquer and divide and conquer and all that kind of good stuff. So anyway, so he gives the boy a gun, sends the boy a gun, says, don't come back. Don't come back and tell her you will get a killer. I want you to have a blood on your hands. So the boy's like, oh, but dad, I just a little boy. I don't want to go and get my killing on. So anyways, like, you will go and do it. If in the you is a my son, don't come back and tell her you will get a killer. So anyway, the kid runs off and the father's like, you know, waiting around, do-do-do-do-do-do, and waiting. And waiting, and waiting, and waiting, until finally he comes back, or the boy doesn't come back, but he's like, huh, I'm a kind of worried about my boy. Either he gets a really big killer, or a really big killer got him. So he then wrangles up a posse and goes out there and says, you know, we gotta find the boy. And according to the story, depending on what account you come across, it's either he comes across it himself or the party comes across it, but they stumble onto the site of what they say, of course, at the time was a werewolf, a large dog man-like creature consuming the boy in the middle of eating the boy. And then they take a shot at it. It runs off, but it's too late for his kid. His kid is, you know, just gone and dead and consumed. And it was a very tragic story. And that is the story of what is known as the Converse Werewolf. And then later on, we have the Defiance, Ohio Dogman. This one is pretty interesting. Okay, what research I got on this was, during the summer of 1972, the people of Defiance claimed they were terrorized by a werewolf. Sightings always happened at night, generally by the train tracks. A couple of women said it would try to get into their houses by rattling the doorknobs. The animal was said to be huge, hairy, and get this, dressed in rags. But after the summer ended, the beast disappeared, never to be heard from again, but the story lingers. So basically, from what I've gathered of this story, it's pretty much like this. There was a guy, as far as I, from most accounts, that who was working on the railroad tracks. He was just sitting there, you know, I'm working on the railroad. He's doing some kind of maintenance or something of that nature. And then, out of the shadows, of course, steps a dog man. This is late at night. So he didn't quite get a good sight of it. It comes up, it walks up to him, it's this. Now, when I picture it, I picture like a big, burly, like werewolf-type creature. He walks up to him. He has tattered clothes. Some people speculate on whether or not he actually had plaid attire on, whether he had plaid rags or a plaid shirt or something of that. All they just say is tattered rags. But apparently, I can just imagine him with, you know, a plaid tattered shirt. He's walking up, you know, the werewolf. And apparently, in one account, it's stated that he had a 2x4, and then he, of course, knocked the fuck out of the guy and, like, smacked the fuck up his ass. You know, just smack. And then proceeded to beat him and chase him from his work on the railroad. Now, that sounds more like a person in a costume, but then I can totally understand it being a hoax, but then all the, and then the rest of it is happening as a result of, you know, people being rattled, sort of like, that public hysteria, like with the Black Eyed Kids a while back. And anytime, you know, it's like you hear that story drop about the Black Eyed Kids, it starts getting prominence. The next thing you know, everybody's got a story. I think it was something along those lines. I'm not quite sure. But apparently that in the summer of 1972, which isn't that far old, and just a fun little note, in 2016, there was an actual Dogman Symposium in the town of Defiance, Ohio. I didn't get to go to that, but I really wanted to go. I hope they have something like that again in the future. Sounds really exciting. Sounds really good. Yep, it's Texas, and it is hot as F. Oh, good God. Now you're like, those are two bad guy Dogmans. Where are the good guy Dogmans? Are there good guy Dogmans? Well, I was able to dig up two accounts. I'm sure there are more, and I would love to find out more Dogman accounts, but I haven't had time or research resources yet to dig into more positive Dogman stories. But if you know any out there, send them my way. I would love to hear them. In Irish lore, they have dogmen or werewolf type creatures within their Irish lore. They're referred to as Fiolad or Conrext. They're pretty much, these are like the words for werewolf or their equivalency of the werewolf. And oftentimes these werewolves in particular, these Irish werewolves, are benign and helpful. They're a guardian and a protector for children and the lost. I heard one account where, you know, they'll help you find fish. They'll serve you fish. It's like, hey, you're hungry. Here's some fish. And they'll slap you upside your head with some fish. They're more guardian spirits of the children, wounded men, the lost. And they don't have many sources on this, but they're pretty much the werewolves of Ossory, which is a sort of, I guess, a town or province up in Ireland. And it's a very interesting sort of story. I mean, there were even accounts of, you know, kings employing these werewolves, armies of werewolves, to help fight in their wars. And pretty much it was a thing where, you know, it was sort of like a, I guess they were a bit like wizards in a way, where someone would go through a complex ritual, become the werewolf, and then, you know, through that gain, you know, power and strength, and then go and kick some ass in the name of the king. I heard one account that the price that you had to pay these hired werewolves was pretty high. I mean, one was like, I think one where they, now this sounds gruesome. It was where they had to be paid in newborn flesh, which pretty much you give them babies to eat. And, yeah, I know that kind of goes against the whole, you know, where I'm trying to sort of push this as a good guy werewolf thing. It does sort of seem like a contradiction where they're eating babies. And then on the other hand, they're also the protectors of children, wounded men, and the lost. That does seem like a conflict of interest there. But again, these are multiple sources, and they very well could be, you know, two different types of groups, maybe overlapping or, in the record, you know, bunched up together. I'm pretty sure that's happened before. Another good guy werewolf story is in, now this one, I remember alluring to it in, if you remember my Bradley Stark interview, we had talked a bit about an Arthurian tale of a werewolf who had come into the service of King Arthur. King Arthur had a werewolf. Isn't that the coolest shit? I know it is. And apparently I did some digging onto that. And there was a story, now whether or not it was its own tale that was later adapted or amalgamated into the Arthurian tale, or if it was an Arthurian tale that was later, you know, cut and pasted onto some other additional lore, I was unable to find anything on that at the moment. However, this is what I was able to find, was there was an Arthurian werewolf who was actually part of the Round Table. His name was Morric. The tale of Morric is pretty much where he was Sir Morric. He was turned into a werewolf, and then what he would do is he would have to remove his clothes And then he'd go out there, he'd do his wolf thing, you know, I don't know, go kill some sheep or, you know, chew some bark in the trees or do, you know, fun stuff, you know, fun wolf stuff. And his wife was all like, you know, you're out there having fun and I'm all here by myself. Fuck you, motherfucker. And then he's all, you know, fuck you, I'm a wolf, bitch. Don't nag me. You can't nag me in wolf form. I'm a wolf. So he goes out there. He does his wolf thing. And apparently in one of the legends, his wife finds his clothes, hides them. Because apparently, according to the ritual, he has to go back to his clothes and use them in part of the ritual to change back. So he's like stuck as a wolf. And it goes that they keep bringing up the number 7. He's 7 years a wolf. King Arthur finds out about this, you know, oh, there's a wolf who's terrorizing these lands. I better go investigate it, do something about it. And apparently when King Arthur comes up, in one of the accounts, the wolf, you know, he sees King Arthur, he recognizes the crown, he has respect for the crown. He runs up to King Arthur, you know, lays his head on King Arthur's foot in a submissive manner. And then King Arthur is like, you know, whoa, this ain't no normal wolf. What's the story here? He goes to the wife who had, in a few tales, had taken on a new suitor. She basically got herself a new man and said, you know, hey, I got me a new pimp daddy. You know, walk on, wolf. And she had sent, you know, King Arthur to pretty much kill the wolf, to kill her husband. Well, apparently King Arthur was all like, you know, hey, this ain't no regular wolf. Something's not right here. What's going on? And then eventually she fesses up and says, oh yeah, I totally have this scheme, blah, blah, blah. And then they find his clothes, return the clothes to the wolf. I don't know where these were for 7 years and that they weren't eaten up by moths. That's not important. The point of the story is he is returned in good condition. He gets his clothes back. He is able to transform back into himself. And then Sir Merrick is then knighted and he becomes one of the king's right hand men or right hand wolf, whatever you would like to say. And then he decides, you know, like, hey, I'm going to join the round table. And then King Arthur is like, hey, yeah, come on, dog. I got a place for you right here, right to my right, motherfucker. And then he becomes, you know, pretty much one of the right hand protectors of King Arthur. And, you know, pretty much happy ending, good stuff like that. Now, if there are any other good guy wolfman or good guy dogman stories out there, please send them to me. Send them either to the email at conspireatheory@gmail.com or just write them to me in either Facebook, Twitter, Gab, Instagram. I would love to hear them. I would love to hear more. I'm just ready for more. I love these stories. Now, let's go to the second part, which is Ask Me Anything. Oh, God. Ugh, man. Okay, so one of the first questions I got was, oh, good God. This was from Instagram. One of my friends posted this, and, Jesus. Okay, here's the question. Do poops push the farts out, or do farts push the poop out? Ah, good God. I really don't know. I mean, cause when you're pooping, you kind of have some farts. And the way that I've heard it is like a poop is like a diesel truck in your ass. And the farts are like honking where it's honking for the right of way. And it's like, and then I think the farts push the poop out. Yeah, I think that's the second part. Okay, what are your top favorite conspiracy theories? Okay, it's from Anonymous. I would have to say my top favorite conspiracy theories at the moment, because it's always changing, because there's always new and interesting stuff out there. One of my favorites is the flat earth, hollow earth simulation theory. I know those are three separate things, but I like to lump them all into one. Because it's this questioning reality narrative. And I love that so much. It's like The Matrix and all that kind of stuff. And Flat Earth, I know that there are a lot of proponents of Flat Earth who are, they're really aggressive and really pushing hard on this. And I think the main tenet of Flat Earth, I think, is that we're brought up in this sort of narrative. And then what I like is I love the debate of Flat Earth is the sort of, you know, it's questioning the established narrative. And what I find is I find the debate interesting because instead of, you know, because of course the thing is to come out when anyone says, you know, oh, I'm pro flat earth, you know, whatever. And the immediate response is, oh, this person is crazy. This person is stupid. This person is uneducated, you know, whatever. This person is not part of the establishment, pre-existing establishment. And I'm like, if, you know, if they're so wrong, just prove them wrong. Just say, hey, here's the evidence. You know, and yeah, a lot of them will probably shoot down and poo-poo the evidence. And there are some instances where I think some people just latch on to the flat earth narrative as a means of just garnishing attention for themselves and getting money. I remember one case where a guy was building his own rocket. He was just a daredevil who just built his own rocket and shot himself into space and all that shit. He was trying to get funds to build his own rocket. Nothing was coming or not as much, you know, not as much people putting down, yeah, hey, I'll give you 20 bucks to shoot your ass out in the space, you know, yuck. And then the second he slapped flat earth on there, you know, I'm going to shoot myself into space to prove the earth is flat. The second he tagged that on, all of a sudden, all this money poured in because he was doing it, you know, quote unquote, for the cause. And then he was able to exploit that to get him some cash flow and to make it happen. And of course he did his thing, you know, I think he broke his ass or something of that nature. But anyway, it really didn't amount to anything. The Hollow Earth. Now that, I think that's more of a lore type of thing. I know that there was, Admiral Byrd, a lot of his accounts, but even those accounts, I kind of find them somewhat questionable because I have to wonder, you know, did this guy make it up or what? I know there are some strangeness surrounding his death and the death of, you know, his kids and stuff, you know, sort of that feeds a conspiracy that there's a secret to be kept. As far as the Hollow Earth thing, I mean, we've all read and been fascinated by stories such as the, Arthur Conan Doyle's, you know, journey to the center of the earth. And it's a very alluring narrative. And I totally think it's totally cool. And then there's simulation theory. Simulation theory it's sort of the matrix archetype applied to real life type of thing. And I think what it is I've heard one take on it that I think is really good. And it's pretty much a way for atheists to say creative design without saying God. And I kind of have to, you know, maybe there's something there, you know, because a lot of people, there's just this huge push against, modern theology. And I kind of get it. You know, the Christians have a sort of checkered past, but then who the fuck doesn't? What religion doesn't? Let's get real here. You know, people, they sort of want to question, reality. They want to question all that stuff, but they don't want theology attached to it. So I kind of think that's where that simulation theory sort of fills that void for some of those people. Now, another conspiracy theory that I love is aliens. Oh God, I love aliens. Greys and stuff. You know, I gotta admit, if Grey came up to me and walked up and said, you know, hey, I'm a Grey, I'm here to conquer your ass, I would probably jump out of my seat and, you know, and just tackle his ass and like bite his face off or something like that, you know, just to see what he's made out of, you know, just cause I'm curious. You know, I've heard that they're androids and stuff. And yes, I know that there are a few aliens out there that it's like, oh, we're these type of space people. Like they're a whole bunch of races and they all, you know, made, backdoor deals with our government, this and that. What I'm curious about is the whole aliens, where are, you know, that sort of narrative of where they're from. Are they from outer space or are they from other dimensions? I kind of wonder that. the whole space thing, you know, it's like the more we learn in our natural world, according to the lore, it adapts to that knowledge. It seems like the more we learn about, you know, the vast distances of space and how some shit just doesn't pan out, it seems like lore-wise, the aliens are then, they have a convenient answer of, oh, we're from further away than that. Because there was a time when Valiant Thor was from Venus, and then we realized that Venus was inhospitable. Then it came out like, oh no, I'm from under the surface. You know, that's just the whole inhospitable surface. That's just an illusion we put on for you guys. For some reason, we have to hide that. And I remember during the Betty and Barney Hill, they said they were from the stars. I think it was, I forget which star system they were from. But apparently they weren't quite, that didn't quite pan out. The other dimension, the extra dimensional thing, that's sort of the next door over, because we now realize that space is really far away. And in order to get here from some of these vast distances, from some of these star systems, you would have to bend time and space. And that would sort of like, if you could do that, then why the hell would you, it seems like it's way more effort to come here than what it's worth. And that's where we get into the, well, maybe they're in other dimensions and stuff. And I think that's a really good speculative thing to debate. Okay, number three, are cryptids real? I often wrestle with that myself. Some of my favorite cryptids are stuff like the Chupacabra, the Dogman. You know, I'm not a big fan of Bigfoot, but I do love the debate of whether or not Bigfoot is out there. The flesh and blood versus world. Now he's interdimensional and stuff like that. If you remember my interview with Crypto Hulk, that was me and him would go back and forth. I think we came up with a sort of he has like a sort of compromise where it's like, you know, maybe it's this flesh and blood thing, but he has this, you know, extraordinary abilities that we're not able to measure at the moment. And I'm like, that's a possibility. But with me, the fact that we haven't hit any of these guys with a car, you know, yet they haven't gotten hit by a car or accidentally caught on camera. Yeah, we have like lots of camera footage, but a lot of it is really questionable. I really don't like the narrative of, you know, well, Bigfoots are just smart enough to avoid the cameras, but then they're Bigfoots. So they live in the woods. What the hell are they going to know about cameras? There's no reason for them to really avoid them if they're a natural creature like any other creature. And if they're interdimensional, you know, then why would they care that a camera records them? Just pop back into your pocket dimension or whatever. Who gives a rat's ass? If you can slide through dimensions, then a camera picking your ass up isn't going to be that big of a deal. And then, of course, there's the Bill Hicks joke of, well, maybe the reason that all the pictures of Bigfoot are fuzzy is because Bigfoot is fuzzy. Maybe that's a thing. Another thing that I find interesting that I love so much is the Mandela effect. The Mandela effect, of course, I remember several times where I remember history as this sort of way. And then I'm told, no, it's not that. It's actually this. And then it's like, but I distinctly remember hearing such and such. One of them was the death of, I think it was Kirk Douglas. He's Michael Douglas's father, Emilio Estevez's grandfather and shit like that. I distinctly remember hearing that he died. And then I see him on Jimmy Kimmel one time. He's up there, you know, he's as sharp as a whip as someone in his age and condition can be. So, you have too many M's in your name, Jimmy Kimmel. And I'm like, yeah, Jimmy Kimmel definitely does have too many M's in his name. But anyways, you know, he's out there, he's alive. And I do distinctly remember, you know, I think it was on television, them saying, you know, oh, he had passed, he had a stroke and he passed. Or maybe it was just that he had had a stroke. And then some people were saying, you know, oh, I remember him, this and that, speaking about him as if he had died. Maybe in my mind had somehow conflated that. That's a total possibility. But anyways, the Mandela effect, it's fun. I enjoy talking about it. I enjoy debating it. And as far as, you know, number five, I'd have to say ESP, extrasensory perception, all that psychic crap. I do believe a lot of us have the potential for psychic abilities, which is, you know, a fun thing to think about. It's sort of like, I like to call it intuition and stuff like that. And then have it be a sort of like, well, maybe we're tapping into something like some sort of natural resource that we just, you know, we're taking advantage of, because there is that sort of thing where you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach and your gut and stuff like that. Like, oh, I got a bad feeling about this. And then something bad happens. And then I do feel there's more to it, but as far as, you know, writing it off as mumbo jumbo, I think that it needs to be researched a bit more. And I know that some people, like, I think the Awake Project, I need to look into that a bit more, because I hear conflicting stories, you know, from secondhand accounts. So I need to get back into the source and take a look into that. So if there are any ESP studies that are pretty interesting, and I know stuff beyond the Mantauk Project and stuff like that, because that is sort of its own kind of worms at the moment, and remote viewing and stuff like that, I find it interesting, and I sort of lump all that together in the ESP thing, and I really do enjoy that. Okay, next question. Top five podcasts. Okay. I'm gonna give you two lists. These are my top five paranormal podcasts and then my top five comedy podcasts that I enjoy. Now, this actually should be something more along the lines of top 20, because I eat podcasts up like there's no tomorrow. I just love them. As soon as I find one, I'll take one and then I'll just gobble up all the episodes. Okay, my top five paranormal podcasts at this moment is the ones that as soon as they pop up, I gotta download them and I gotta listen to them right away. Okay, one that I'm really enjoying a lot lately is Monster Talk. That's pretty cool. It's like a more skeptical sort of podcast, and there are some times where, you know, they get skeptical to the point that they're, you know, pretty much cynical and snotty about it. But it really isn't that bad. It's still a good listen. And then another one is Paranormal Thoughts. This one is based out of Australia or Austria, some sort of foreign-ness type of country, you know, way the fuck out there. He's a very soft-spoken individual. He has really good shows together, and his interviews of alien abductees are very good. He talks about some of his own experiences, and I really enjoy his show, as he hasn't been dealing them out a lot lately, but when he does, you know, I jump on them right away because I enjoy them so much. And then number three, I would have Blackout with Samantha Scarlett. I really enjoy her show. You have to sort of get used to her cadence, because she does sort of talk like a Valley Girl in a sort of way. And we're not saying that to demean her. It's just, but when I listened to a couple of shows, yeah, sure. At first I was kind of dismissive, like, oh, great, what is this chick going to know? And then she lays down some knowledge, and she's a very well-read, researched person. And she's a great host on some of these topics, and she has on some fascinating people. And I really like some of the interview type of style shows that she has and some of the topics that she discusses. It's a really good show. And then another one that I love is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague. I remember listening to him when he used to do the auxiliary on Into the Fray. And then he since then has sort of, you know, rolled it over into Somewhere in the Skies podcast, which is his own thing, and with his book. And his shows are very well done, very well produced. It's like a lot of, you know, he'll talk about a subject, and then he'll have some footage of whatever it is that he's talking about. And it's a really good, well put together show. Very, very well done. And then another one, I sort of put this one in the paranormal. It's sort of paranormal slash comedy, but it's more paranormal for me when they do discuss paranormal. And that is Last Podcast on the Left. Pretty much everybody loves this podcast, and it is a really good podcast. When they talk paranormal stuff, you know, I stick to it like glue. Like, it is really good, very entertaining. The jokes are great, you know, and it is very, very well researched. I would say, I know they've sort of gone into that dip of true crime now, where I see this happening with a lot of paranormal podcasts. Well, they'll do this thing where they do the, like, 1 foot in true crime, 1 foot in paranormal. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, there's just not a lot of paranormal content out there. So, of course, true crime is the next best thing. And I wonder, you know, why is there so much crossover between true crime and paranormal? And I think it's that sort of the mystery of the unknown. And the true crime, it's sort of that, you know, you still get to sort of playfully chase a monster, except in this case, the monster is a person. So it's sort of like that humanity is the greatest monster of all type of thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyways, it is a great, humorous podcast, and I love it so much. Okay, now we have top five comedy podcasts that I love. Number one I would have to put up there is Legion of Skanks. A friend of mine turned this on to me, and I cannot get enough of it. Legion of Skanks. It is terribly funny. It is, like, horrendous. It is offensive comedy off the wall. You know, you will die laughing if you love that kind of humor. And then a step down from that is Real Ass Podcast. Now, one of the hosts of Legion of Skanks sort of has his own show, Real Ass Podcast. It's a more settled down, sort of more low-key type of show. And Real Ass Podcast is a lot of fun. It's more like a toned-down one-on-one, lots of humor. They basically talk a lot of hot topics and hot takes and stuff. That one of the things that I love is they step away from the political a bit. I mean, they'll get political when it's like the freedom of speech and canceled culture and all that stuff, that sort of online ridiculousness. And unfortunately, yeah, politics has sort of seeped its way into all of our entertainment, and it is sort of a take on that. This is more done from it's more like stand-up fodder and shit like that. Another one that I enjoy is Cumtown. Cumtown is one of my favorite, again, this would be my number one, but I'm just listing, this is just a list, and these aren't in any particular order, but Cumtown is tons of fun. It's just funny for funniness sake. You know, it's just like everyone's an idiot. It's like, you know, you get the hard R's and the hard N's and the hard this and the hard that. It's hard, you know, really good humor. It's offensive comedy. It's very, very edgelord type of stuff. And it is just so, so good and delicious. Just delicious humor. Another one that I enjoy is Red Scare. I had recently got onto this one sort of by accident. I guess it was like on Twitter, I'd seen that one of the girlfriends of the Cumtown boys had her own podcast, and I was like, wait, what? And then they were talking about this subject, and I was like, wait a second, what is this all about? So Red Scare is pretty much two Russian chicks. They talk about, you know, it's a lot of cultural criticism and stuff like that, but it's more highbrow political dissection and stuff like that. They do talk a lot about Trump and stuff, but they're not really, yeah, they are leftists, but they're not like hardcore to the point that they're not any fun. I don't know how to best describe it. It's like, it's not exactly Cumtown where, you know, they're just, you know, it's fart jokes for the sake of fart jokes. And if something political gets in there, Red Scare is more of a social critical analysis type. It's extremely highbrow, but the hot takes cut really deep and they're really good. When I listen to the show, you know how some shows, as soon as you listen to them, you feel like much, much smarter and more awake and stuff like that. When I listen to Red Scare, it reminds me of how stupid I am. Yeah, I laugh at all the dumb jokes, but on top of that, it's still an entertaining podcast. And it's like, yeah, I laugh at most of their stuff when they do, you know, oh, do fart jokes, Joe Rogan, I laugh at that. And then they'll make an off comment about, you know, Marxism and stuff, and I don't get it, and it just reminds me how stupid I am. But still, it's entertaining. It's highly entertaining. I definitely recommend you guys listen to it. And another one is Frank and Oz. Oh, God, I love this show. It's more like offensive humor. It's these two British guys who are like wannabe stand-ups who, you know, talk about how their life sucks and how terrible everything is. And it's pretty much just, you know, shitlord type of, you know, bad taste comedy. But they're, it's very difficult to describe because it's just so good. It's like, you know, poop jokes from the source, pretty much, you know. And these guys, they're just such a riot. I love them. I follow them on Twitter. And every single time they'll post a new show, I'll retweet it. And it's like, finally, the highbrow of British humor, you know, which it absolutely isn't. But I love that show. Okay, now, okay, last question, because I'm going to have to wrap up some time here. Okay, what anime are you watching? Okay, I'm a huge fan of anime. I love anime. I love, you know, sci-fi and all that stuff. So anime, of course, is something that I've grown up with. I've always loved it, but this is what I'm currently watching right now. I had just finished up Ultraman on Netflix. Ultraman is a really good series. It's sort of the latest incarnation of the Ultraman mythos. And it's good and it's fun. It has that sort of anime feel, but it still has that sort of old fashioned kaiju fun and good sort of kaiju type of stuff going on. Of course, now in the first season, no one really grows big, but it's sort of, they do have monsters and aliens and stuff like that. And it's sort of a bit more of a intrigue espionage type of show. But it goes more of the superhero flair, which I'm starting to see happen a lot in anime now. And I guess that's sort of the influx of the Marvel movies is sort of, you know, affecting their culture as well. And it is just, it's really, really good. It feels like a really good Spider-Man, Iron Man-esque type of story. And I enjoy it a lot. I love this incarnation of Ultraman. It is, it's just, it's good and fun. Now, on another one that I had recently finished up, and I really loved it when it first started out, is Killing Bites. Killing Bites is sort of a fighting, what I would like to call testosterone theater type of show. Now, before you, on earlier shows, you had heard me talk about Baki on Netflix, which is, you know, just a bunch of tough guys fighting it out and shit like that. You know, that's sort of that testosterone theater type of thing. Well, Killing Bites, you can get that on Prime if you have a Prime account. It's pretty much the first season. It sets up where there's this sort of this world of underground fighting, and all the fighters are enhanced with these sort of, they're these hybrid type of, you know, animal people. And it's, and I think it's sort of, it's the best term that I can describe it as. It's hot garbage testosterone theater. I mean, the main character, the main protagonist is a girl, and she is a honey badger. She transforms into a honey badger. And throughout the show, it's sort of that, you know, Dragon Ball Z, you know, where one fight lasts like four episodes and shit like that. You know, it's fun and it's entertaining. And of course, the main protagonist, she has this saying where she's like, you know, whoever has the sharpest fangs wins, because that's what Killing Bites is. And she'll say it like over and over again. And it's so fucking annoying. But whenever she says it, that's like, oh, this is the cue for something extremely badass is going to happen. And it's a good show. I mean, I liked it up until the last episode, because in the last episode, it decided to get all Game of Thrones on my ass, and I was like, oh, God. It went all, yeah, the last episode goes super-duper Game of Thrones type of, you know, twisted shit, and it's like, kind of ruined it for me, because it had, like, good momentum, but it's a good show. Definitely check it out, but know what you're getting into. Again, testosterone theater, hot garbage. If you have a Crunchyroll account, the series that I'm going through right now is The Helpful Fox Cinco-san. This is more along the lines of sort of like, what was that other show? It's something like, Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, something like that, where it's this sort of the main protagonist, of course, is this guy, and then he has this supporting character, which is sort of this fox demon, the Kitsune, which of course is the trickster type of it, it's sort of their, you know, the Japanese equivalent of the trickster demon type of thing. And in this one, the helpful fox, she's sort of this, you know, it's a cute, adorable series, and it's just a fun series. I'm like maybe up to like episode 6 right now. It's just a good series. Anyway, check it out. I had to jump onto that when I had finished Kimino Friends. Kimino Friends season 2. It was a blast. You know, it was a really good series. And I really do enjoy the Kimino. It's again more of that sort of, you know, animal girl friends type of show. It's good and it's fun. And then another one that I go back to every now and then is Strike Witches. I love Strike Witches because it's sort of that World War II type of vibe, except it's not, it's like kind of, you know, it's basically the world versus these killer aliens from outer space. And it sort of has this sort of, Navy Air Force flair to it in a sort of way. And it comes off like it's a period, like a 1940s period piece type of show. But it's more along the lines of, you know, with cute anime girls riding around, with like, instead of brooms, they have these things on their legs that are supposed to, you know, resemble jets. And each one is sort of a pseudo nation. Like there's an American pseudo nation, a European pseudo nation, a Germany pseudo nation. It's fun. I like Strike Witches. It's pretty good. So I guess this will probably wrap up for now. Thanks for tuning in, and I will catch you guys later. You know, be sure to write in more questions if you want to do another additional Ask Me Anything type of stuff. You know, send me some good, fun questions too. These ones were pretty fun and good, and we'll see if we can, you know, poop one of those out later, or if the farts poop it out. Anyways, thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate all your support for so far. And, you know, just continue listening and sharing the show with your friends. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts as well as paranormal podcasts. And I always try to show some of the love back on Twitter where I can be, you know, most active. And, you know, I try to be funny on Twitter and shit like that. So if you see me on Twitter, say hello. You know, just go to Conspire Theory and you'll find me there on the Twitters. I'm not all that active on the other media. I do have the Instagram, the Conspire Theory Instagram. That's Conspire, you know, the underscore A and then underscore A Theory, you know, Conspire A Theory with underscores between the words. And you'll find me on there, and I'm doing this thing where I, you know, I'll try to post up stories and fun stuff like that. So keep up with me. You know, I'll try to say hey when I get the chance, and I'll see you guys out there. And this will be it for tonight. So see you guys later and have a good day.